floats through the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Jeff Tobias, Yada, Jeff Parker, Leia, Alan Licht, Sarah Hennies, Claire Rousset, and so many more. But this week, I am excited to have Tony Rolando. Every time I say that, I keep thinking it sounds like Orlando. Tony Rolando. Tony is an artist, a musician, a synthesist. He's all these things I talk about in the intro. I'm repeating myself here, but I've been a big fan of Tony's music for a while. And it's funny. So I interviewed him last year for the site. We premiered this amazing video he did, and I did an interview with him and with the filmmaker. And I never really put together or realized, because like I've only in the last year been going down the road of getting into like modular synthesis, didn't realize Tony was a legend. And so like he makes incredible music. And it's like, oh shit, he like co-founded one of the most badass synthesizer companies in the world. So yeah, he's the co-founder of Make Noise Music. And that was just like, boom. And it's really cool. Like, and he's so generous with his knowledge and his insight and his thoughts. And he really, with a project that I'm working on, has really offered some really useful expertise that is, I'm super grateful for. But the thing that finally set up the kind of doing this episode was he's got this incredible new album out called Imagine a Dolphin. It's two tracks, Imagine a Dolphin Drowning, Imagine a Dolphin Dreaming. And basically he used a bunch of field recordings, or not really field recordings, but like sound recordings of water, and put them and like processed them and created these beautiful, sometimes haunting, very immersive works from them. And I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that I love, like water sounds, and using them in soundscape composition is as much in my wheelhouse as could possibly be in my wheelhouse. And Tony, with his his approach and everything, has made one of the most interesting albums from that base that I've heard in a long, long time. So, perfect opportunity to get him on the show. And it was so much fun. So, check out the album, link in the show notes, and yeah, it Make Noise Music. You should go support them too. And, all the things. So yeah, hope you enjoy it. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a synthesist. I don't know what that even means, but the co-founder of Make Noise Music, it's Tony Rolando. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brad.
So you got this new album out called Imagine a Dolphin. And I was just saying to you, it's kind of using water as the basis jumping off point, like water and synthesizers, which I good lord, that is somebody was like, two words to describe your interest, what would it be? For me, it'd probably be water and synthesizers. But I guess to start, like, when what kind of first drew you to this idea of using like water recordings as both like the sound and compositional sources in conjunction with like the modular synth?
Well, for years the best sounds, or I should say, the sounds that I was really drawn to making with modular oftentimes had a liquid quality to them.
Yeah.
And so it kind of feels like a natural progression. But then in addition to that, there is this person, I don't know if I'm going to say his name correctly, Ifta Gabba. And I was introduced to him. I've never actually met him in real life, but I was introduced to him on email because he did the CV Tools devices for Ableton Live. But then in addition to that, he has this passion for ultrasonic recording, where he uses this special type of microphone that records up to 100 kilohertz. Jeez. And he records sounds and then slows them down a whole lot. And I have been working with a lot of water sounds that were just from old, like sound effects CDs and stuff, mm-hmm. because the quality of them was so good. But right. when I would make my own water recordings, like outside or whatever, there was always so many other sounds that they felt very, they were more like environmental as opposed to just being purely liquid.
Yeah.
And what I noticed when IFTTTO would slow things down, they sound larger than life. And so I had this thought, like, it might be really incredible to set up a real, like, almost like water in a vacuum. But obviously my studio is really small, so I can't work with, like, a 500-gallon tank or something. So instead I was working with, like, a one-gallon bowl and recording it. But with at 96 kilohertz with this mic that's capable of capturing high frequencies. And then I would slow them down a great deal. And I started noticing all these rhythms and sort of like micro. It was almost like the water itself was creating micro rhythms, micro compositions that I wanted to develop a patch which would sort of highlight those and make them come to life, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so that was the whole process. It started with IFTTTO's ultrasonic recordings, and I emailed with him a bunch trying to get him to sell me one of his mics, and he didn't have time to build one. So it took me a minute to find another company making them, and I did find them, Sonorous Audio, I think is their name. And okay. I can give you a link if you're,
yeah,
if you're interested.
Yeah,
the cool thing is they aren't even that expensive. It's like, they're not like some super, like, it's not like thousands of dollars. They're actually pretty, because I think the general purpose for this type of microphone capsule is for scientific purposes, mm-hmm. where they're recording, you know, things like bugs and birds and fish and things like this in order to study their communication patterns. So they're very, like, they're actually pretty, they're very, like, unhyped, I guess. It's like almost more like a scientific tool than like a creative tool in some ways.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, that's something I think about a lot, and the capturing water sounds is, yeah. I mean, it's the constant. I mean, I've projects I'm working on, this constant battle of trying to isolate those water sounds without everything else. And I unfortunately, with some things, it's like I'm trying to record this lake, I can't transport it to my studio.
Oh, right. I know that's a great point, because your project isn't just about water, it's about a location as well. Yeah. A very specific location.
Yeah, but so I will I'm sure everyone's excited to hear this, but I would definitely love the information about the microphones, because that's, you know, that's a huge piece of this project, is like finding the right microphones and getting the right recordings. It's back to the album. It's funny, when you first sent it to me and I read it, like, I was imagining you like dumping actual water into the synthesizer. And I was like, it's like, oh, it's like this Anaya Lockwood's, you know, like burning the piano thing. But, that would be kind of amazing, but I don't think it would probably fare too well.
Well, I guess since I work at the place where we build and repair them, I would be the most likely candidate to do that.
Yeah. If anyone's going to do it, you should, just to see what happens. You're probably the one. I'm curious. When you got these recordings, you were talking about like slowing them down. So on the album, is this like, how much of this is like you doing this live, kind of processing it live, or is it more of, I guess, more of a studio? I don't know. You know, like what is kind of the approach? Like, once you've got these recordings and you're making, you know, creating these pieces, like, yeah.
So there's a lot of preparation, but the actual recordings were done live.
Oh, nice.
I have, I'm looking over here, you can't see it. I have a DX7, and then I had the shared system with the patch on it. Mm-hmm. And what would happen is I'd come home after work, eat some dinner, hang out with Kelly for a little bit, and then I would go into the studio and I would just run, you know, take passes, just like,
yeah,
you know, throw the patch into the mixer, hear where it's at, play it for a while, and, you know, while also playing the DX7, although admittedly I'm not, you know, playing the DX7 a lot. I'm using it. It's a patch I designed that will basically play infinitely. And so it's almost like you just have all these sine waves that can just drone infinitely. So I'm more setting up the drones with the DX7 and then playing the patch. But, you know, truth be told, there was a great deal of preparation,
right?
You know, making the samples, which was a lot of trial and error in order to get the right type of like mic placement and like figuring out that, you know, how quiet did the room need to be to really make them sound isolated. Cause I wanted it to sound like water in a vacuum, like a world, yeah, where the only thing there was these glass walls and water, like nothing else, that. Nothing else exists. It's just, yeah, water. And so I was trying really hard to like isolate them as much as possible. And so there was a lot of preparation of those sounds and editing of them. And then those go into the morphogene. And since the sounds are already at 96 kilohertz, morphogene assumes everything's at 48 kilohertz. So immediately they're already half speed.
Right.
And so morphogene can go from there, from half speed down.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
So that's where a lot of the good things, that's where you really start noticing the, like I said, the sort of water symphonies, you know, the yeah, micro rhythms and patterns and stuff that emerge, because the bowl was just as small as like 1 gallon of water, but once you slow it down it starts to sound bigger.
Yeah it sounds like I'm kind of blown away that it's a like little like a small 1 gallon thing, because it sounds like this massive, I mean, it sounds like a planet or something. Like, I mean, yeah, this description of like a glass room or with just full of water, to me, it's like a water planet or something. It's great.
That's great. I'm glad that you got that, because that is kind of what I was hoping for. Like a planet exists, you know, it's in space, and space is in some, yeah, ways a vacuum until you get to a planet. And
right,
all the planet was water. Well, that's what I was hoping to create.
There,
so
yeah,
a lot of preparation, you know, also, yeah, building the patch.
Sure.
So there's Rene patterns that go with each of the water recordings. And so there's five different ones, and each one has its own Rene and Tempe. What do we call those? I can't remember what we call them. But its own Rene and Tempe settings, stored states. Yeah, mm-hmm, that was the word we used for them. And the patch doesn't change. So each one, you've heard four of them. The fifth one is going to be on a comp that will benefit some recovery efforts. Oh, nice. Here in Asheville. But each one of those four has its own Tempe and Rene states, but the rest of the patch stays the same. And so the recordings are just live passes playing that patch and the DX7.
Wow, that's awesome. Do you see this approach ever sort of expanding into other like natural or environmental settings or recordings?
I do. I'm excited to find the time to make some more recordings and try to find what other natural things could suggest composition.
Yeah. I recommend, I don't know if you're familiar with Susie Ibarra's work, but she wrote this book, which the name is escaping me. I will send you a link and I'll put a link in the show notes. But she's done a lot of work where, like, one of the things that I think is really interesting that when you were talking about, like, the microrhythms and stuff, is she kind of developed this sort of, like, score and even an equation to, like, map the rhythm of waves, like ocean waves.
Whoa.
And she has this other thing where she records trees with contact mics and then breaks them down into these, like, fractal rhythms and stuff.
Okay, yeah, I want to hear this. I want to read it. Yeah,
yeah, it's really
please.
Yes, it's really cool. So I'm really. It's I'm excited to see, just like I said, this album really scratched an itch for me. So I'm excited to see like what else you can find to explore this way. Is there one last question? Is there any particular story behind the album name?
Yeah, so it was actually a line from a story that Kelly wrote. And I think what appealed to me, because initially it was just called Water Studies, and it was Water Studies 1, Water Studies 2, and it just seemed so like kind of boring, maybe a little academic almost. And it was, I was putting it together and trying to come up with a name. I had made art, the cover art, which I did using my video synth, which is mostly LZX stuff. Thank you, LZX. And also there is some of the VHS stuff, the video headroom systems. Love that stuff. So it was, I was reading her story and that line is in there. And there was something about it that just made me think a lot about just things that have been happening in my life. And, you know, because a dolphin is such a beautiful animal, the way it moves, not that I know that much about them, but I assume that they live very beautiful lives for the most part. And then a dolphin drowning is, you know, some people have told me the album is Imagine a Dolphin, but one side is Imagine a Dolphin Drowning, and the other side, both sides containing two of the pieces, is called Imagine a Dolphin Dreaming. And some people have said Imagine a Dolphin Drowning is so, it's such a dark title.
Yeah.
But then I was talking with my friend, Brett Naki, and we were thinking about it. You know, drowning is actually a pretty peaceful way, we believe. I mean, obviously neither of us have experienced it, but we believe it would be a pretty peaceful way to pass. And a dolphin drowning, I mean, then the dolphin would be in what I would assume to be its favorite place in the water. Right. So it's ending its life in the best possible way. Its life was very beautiful, but now it's ending. And I think maybe just because so many things have ended in my life recently, and especially like in Asheville, so many things have come to a close due to the hurricane. I think Asheville's a very beautiful place, and many things passed due to water.
Right.
So it just felt like an apt title. I know that's probably a little bit of a stretch.
It makes sense to me. And I do like, you know, a lot of people, like humans often say like, oh, I just want to like die in my sleep. To me, like a dolphin drowning, that's like the equivalent or something, right? I mean, it's just like peaceful, you know?
Yeah. That's a great point. A dolphin drowning would be just very similar to a human drowning and or passing in sleep. And because, most humans love sleep.
Yeah.
We can never quite get enough of it.
Right. And,
there's some wonderful times are had during sleep.
Yeah. And then, so, well, going from, this is going to be a great segue. Going from end of life, we're going to go now all the way back almost to the beginning and get into the questions here. So as always, to start, what is the first song that you remember?
Yeah, the first song that left an impression on me was Rockwell's Somebody's Watching Me.
Yeah.
And
still a banger.
It is. I went back and listened. I looked it up and listened to it again, and I thought, no, this is a song worth remembering.
Yeah.
There's so many things about it that are just...
Yeah, just like from the beginning, strange. I forgot about the vocoder on it, like at the beginning. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God, immediately it has me.
I know. Right. And at that point, I was already a Michael Jackson fan. Obviously, most of us kids, you know, in 1984, 83 were Michael Jackson fans. So when that song came on the radio, it immediately has a very unique sound, and it has this sort of playfulness and it's kind of it's a little cheeky and strange and weird compared to other stuff that was on the radio. Then MJ's voice comes in for the chorus, and you didn't know he was going to be in the song.
Right.
And it's just like, boom. Whoa. Okay, this song's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
well, I was going to say, I think also as a kid, you do feel like somebody's always watching you, you know?
Absolutely.
Adults are always trying to see what you're up to and make sure you're not doing something wrong or bad, or, you know, your teachers are always watching you, and your parents are watching you. You know, you always feel like someone's watching you. So it really did feel like a song that was written for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. Gosh, and now, I mean, in 2024, it has like a whole other connotation of somebody's watching.
That's crazy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I can't remember the last time I listened to this song, and I was, it's a song worth remembering. It is a great, I mean, just everything about it, like, it's so well done.
Yeah, and, yeah, excellent grooves, super funky synth lines.
Yeah.
Synths are awesome.
I know, yeah, I mean, it's like, hey, like, you were the synth thing from the beginning. It was, is your destiny, man. Well, what is a song that either it makes you cry or makes you feel that some kind of way, I guess?
Yeah. Billie Eilish, When the Party's Over. And I'm not it's not the lyrics. It's just the timbre of her voice. Yeah. It's almost like she's suggesting to you that it's okay to cry. So it's not even about the song. It's about her energy sort of letting you know, if you need to cry, if you want to cry,
it's okay.
Now is an okay time to do it. And that song comes on, and it just, I don't know, there's like a, it's like, oh, yeah, it's time to cry a little.
Yeah, I don't even know that I know what the words to it are, now that you mentioned that, because it doesn't matter.
It really doesn't. Her voice is so beautiful, it doesn't matter. Yeah, I had to look them up, because I was curious. I was like, what even is this song about? It's weird that I didn't want to pick a song and then read the lyrics and realize there's no reason to cry. The lyrics really don't matter, but they are kind of about just a sort of coming of time, you know, like mm-hmm. something is coming to pass, some great moment in your life or some person, something is over, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love this song. I really love the production of it too. Just like, the way that her vocals are used so many different ways. And, mm-hmm. And it's, when I was looking at this, like, she was like 16 or 17 when she did this, which blows my mind.
Shit. I didn't realize she was that young. That's crazy. Cause the vocal contains like decades worth of like sadness and like,
right. It's like, dang,
tragedy.
I know that. Yeah. That it really kind of made me, I had to just like stop for a minute and, okay, that's when I was 16, I was not doing this.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. My daughter, she's 11 and is very much into pop music and stuff, and so like Billie Eilish has been one of the things where her and I both have like a really have I mean, she kind of got me into it, to be honest. Like, I hadn't really paid much attention, and then she was listening to it, and I was like, dang, this is, there's something here. So, okay. On the other side of the coin, what's something that'll put you in a better mood?
Jam On It by Nucleus.
Yeah. Anything that starts with a bass line like that is just going to improve your day.
I know, right? It's such a sick bass line. It's one of the best. And they used to play it at the roller rink that I roller skated at when I was a kid. They played it there a lot. But honestly, I don't think I've ever really stopped listening to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I play it a few times a year pretty much since it came out, because I believe that's when they started playing it at the roller rink, because that's when I went to the roller rink in the mid-80s. Also, just like, I love the sped up vocals.
Yes.
The story about Superman coming down to the planet to see if anybody could rock. I mean,
it's so weird, but it's one of those things. Like, I always, this is something I think about in music. Like, it's
there's like a silliness and it's like fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, and I'm just as guilty. Good Lord. All my music does. My music isn't silly and fun most of the time. But it's like, I think that's a hard thing. Like, that's a harder thing to do really well mm-hmm. than like serious or sad or whatever, you know? And this, yeah, this is just effusive.
Yeah. Yeah. You see it in film too. It's so hard to make a really good comedy.
Yeah.
You know, how many great comedies can you name, but how many great films can you name? You know, there's a lot of great sad films or tragic films. It's a lot fewer great comedies. That this yeah. song is truly great. And you're right. It's super fun and whimsical. There's yeah. also a little bit of a toughness to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the beat definitely has like a toughness yeah. to it, or it yeah. did in the 80s. Maybe today it feels a little less so, but when it came out, it felt kind of tough.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's that edge to it. And just when you mentioned the roller rink, I'm just there. Like, yeah, I can see the roller rink I used to go to and hear this song. Like,
yep.
Oh, man. Okay. Love it. Yeah, no, this is, I hadn't thought about this song in a while, so this is definitely going on my like get it hyped, gotta get like clean the house playlist.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Okay, well, everybody's favorite question: what is objectively the best song of all time?
Okay, yeah, I don't know if I cheated a little bit here or not, but I kind of took, you know, there's a part of the question where you say if mm-hmm. aliens showed up and you wanted to show them the height of sonic achievement. So I kind of took yeah. it from that angle more, which is a little easier, at least for me.
Yeah, sure.
And I would take these aliens, if they would come with me, I would take them to an Age of Reflections concert, either Suzanne Ciani or Alessandro Cortini. And we would sit quietly with the other humans in this massive space built for deity worship centuries ago, but allowing this agnostic sound to envelop us. Yeah. I feel like there's just so much to unpack with something like that. So these aliens would get to experience both like the history of like human development, you know, this church, for example, yeah. this massive, gorgeous structure that was built to make sounds sound bigger and more impressive and more wonderful. And there's this whole lineage with that, but then mm-hmm. also electronic music, which obviously is, in my opinion, the pinnacle. And, you know, who better to represent that than someone like Suzanne or Alessandro, who are both very yeah. different, but also kind of encompass a lot of the things that make electronic music wonderful. Mm-hmm. And both of them really know how to use a space like a cathedral, mm-hmm. which I think would also be impressive to these aliens to hear how the humans use the architecture to further amplify yeah. and beautify the music that they're making.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if I'm maybe cheating a little bit there.
Yeah.
I had some alternate picks in case that was an unacceptable answer.
No, I think that's a great answer. I mean, I've not been to one of the Age of Reflections concert, but I've been to, like, I mean, I've seen Suzanne. I've never seen Alessandro. Suzanne, it's like, she's my, yeah, good Lord. No, I have not enough superlatives for how I feel about Suzanne Ciani's music. No, I think that's, and I really like the part, like what you were saying about how you, the way that the space sort of becomes part of the sound, mm-hmm. And because that's something I think about a lot is how, yeah, like the relationship of sound and space, even if it's not like music, just, you know, I have a project that I'm doing with a friend of mine where we are just making room recordings of different buildings and spaces mm-hmm. around Oklahoma. And it's, I mean, it's very much kind of an homage to I'm Sitting in a Room, which is one of my favorite pieces of music ever made. But like, I think about that all the time, how the sound of a space affects your experience of that space. And I think that's, I don't know, to me, that feels like a very human thing. So I'm like adding in then yeah, somebody like Alessandro or Suzanne, who are doing some of the most incredible music in the world. I completely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would help the aliens not attack us. So there you go.
Yeah, they might really enjoy. I mean, there's also something about listening to music with other humans. And especially, mm-hmm. so these Age of Reflection concerts, what's cool about them is that people only go there to listen to the music. There's no bar. It's not really a club environment. So the door is open. You seat yourself, and the music starts right on time. It's not one of these things where you're waiting and waiting. When are they going to start? It starts. Yeah. If it says 8 o'clock, that's when it starts. And then when the music's over, everybody gets the fuck out. It's not really a club environment. So I feel like that's the other kind of neat thing about it. You're with all these other humans, but really just for the purpose of experiencing this music together. And there's an energy to that.
Yeah.
Even though you're not talking about it, it's sort of like when you see a movie in the theater versus, mm-hmm. At home, streaming it on Netflix or something. When you're in the theater, you're not talking with any of the other people really, but there's like a presence. And I feel like maybe these aliens would appreciate that.
No. Yeah. I think that's it's those kind of shared experiences, I think, are what we need more of so badly. Like, and I think the movie theater, that's a really good example. Like my daughter, we went and saw Wicked over the weekend, and it was like this real, but just like as everybody's leaving the theater, you're not even talking to each other. I mean, like I'm talking to my daughter and I'm talking to my wife, but like, we're not even talking to it, but you feel this connection, right? Like this.
Yeah.
And there's something, I don't know. Yeah. There's something like really powerful and meaningful about that. And that sounds like an amazing con. I haven't had the opportunity to see one of those Age of Reflections concerts, but that sounds incredible.
It's worth going to.
Okay. Well, on a different tip, what is a song you used to love that you've heard it recently, or you think about it now and it doesn't really do it for you anymore?
It's a hard one for me because I liked this band a lot back in the day, back in the 90s and the early 2000s. And when I hear them now, I feel nothing. Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground, White Stripes, and really almost anything, but I've tried to listen to other White Stripes albums and it's a very strange feeling.
Yeah.
To just know like, hey, this was a band that I really liked and I'm hearing them now and I'm not feeling it. It's just not, it's not cutting into me. Like it's not cutting into me at all.
Right. Yeah. That it is such a weird, like now that you like saying it that way, it is thinking about music like that for me here, where it's like, yeah, this used to be so important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just,
it's the same music. The music didn't change. Yeah. You changed.
Right.
And, so that's a little scary that you like something a lot. And it's not like when you're a kid and you like something and then you grow up. I mean, by the time this song came out, I was already in my 20s and, fairly, developed person. So, I was an adult. So yeah. I'm an adult then, adult now. It's other things that change that just make the song have almost no impact for me now.
Yeah, that's really, you've got me like thinking about, like for me, I think like Radiohead is kind of one of those bands for me. I love them. I was like, my wife and I met because like, that was one of the things we had in common was like, we both had this huge, and she's still a huge fan. But it's like, I listen to it now and it doesn't really do anything for me. And I keep like trying to like, it's like, okay, maybe I'm just not in the right, but it's just gone.
That's even heavier because that's something you share with a very special person in your life. Yeah. So yeah, I could see the motivation to rekindle the fire there, right, with the Radiohead.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's like, gosh, is this same? But no, it's fine. But it's a weird, that is such a, it's an interesting way to think about like how, even as an adult at one period, adult another period, how different we become. I mean, that's, tracking it by the music that we, that it means something to us.
Yeah.
Well, what is a song that most people, some group of people, I don't know who these people are. Somebody hates it. You don't care. You love it no matter what.
It's a Letter to ZZ Top by U.S. Maple.
Yeah.
And I love this song. And usually when I put it on, unless I'm with my good pal, Colleen Burke, I give a shout out to Colleen. Unless I'm with Colleen, it's usually just completely pissing off everyone in the room, which, truth be told, I think U.S. Maple would probably be pretty happy to hear that.
Yeah, I think so.
But, I mean, I just think they're the rockin'est band. Oh, like, one of the greatest rock bands to ever exist. And so, to me, I throw that song on, I'm ready to rock.
Yeah.
Song rules. And everyone else is thinking, what is this cacophonous bullshit? Turn it off.
Man, I'm right. One of my notes on here is that it's like U.S. Maple are one of my favorite bands of all time. I fucking love them so much. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I maybe know like one other person who it's the same thing. Like if I put it on and everyone's just, what are you? Yeah. And one of the, it was funny, like thinking about the Whites. I was thinking about the White Stripes. Like I don't find like Jack White's guitar playing very interesting, or I don't know, like it just doesn't really do it for me, but like Mark Shippey is one of my favorite guitar players ever.
Hell yeah.
He's just I feel like he's, and I mean this in the most positive way, he's like out of his mind. It's like, how do you even come up with this?
It's, you know, so bizarre. I mean, the whole band is kind of, the drummer is amazing too.
Yeah.
I mean, and Al the singer is just like off, totally unhinged. Did you ever get to see him live?
No, I didn't, unfortunately.
Total maniac. Al is just total maniac live.
I can only imagine.
Super fun show. And they sound awesome. That's the other thing. They're one of those bands that, like, how they sound live is kind of how they sound on these records. Like, the drummer, wow, the guitar players all kind of lock in these strange ways. And it's just, yeah, they're a really, really good band.
Yeah, that's, like, one of the really cool things. Is I feel like everybody in the band is just this, like, savant level talent at what they, mm-hmm, like their instrument and stuff, but they're also totally unhinged at the same time. And like that combination is it's rare and it's incredible. Yeah, all the reunion tours we're having in the world, like, let's get, this is the one, we, you know, like, let's have U.S. Maple go out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love this. I totally, though, I relate. Nobody I know wants to,
nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah. It's their loss. It's their loss.
It is.
Okay, well, do you think of yourself as a romantic?
A little, yeah, I would say yes.
Okay. So what is then the most romantic song?
It's A Stream with Bright Fish, Harold Budd and Brian Eno.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, it's a very good makeout song.
You said that. I'm like, okay. I can kind of see it though, because it's got, it feels like very dreamy,
mm-hmm,
like that, like kind of like dreamy feeling of romance. But then it's like also kind of intimate and otherworldly, and I can see it. Like this is,
give it a try.
Yeah, I plan on it. haven't told my wife that yet, but I plan on it. This whole record is incredible, though.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like it's like one of the most formative records, like, or influential records for a lot of the music I make in some ways.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, well, what is a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
Okay, yeah, I'm going to go with the positive, for better. Okay. The Pure and the Damned, 10 Tricks Point Never, and Iggy Pop. So the story behind this is that at Make Noise, a lot of the young folks who worked there were very into 10 Tricks, mm-hmm, and they would play the records, and I didn't get it. And this is like back like 2012, 2013, like super early 10 Tricks. These kids had their finger on the pulse.
Fun fact, Daniel Lopatin wrote for Foxy Digitalis like 100 years ago. So
he wrote, like, for what?
For my website, for Foxy Digitalis.
Oh, Oh, that's cool. That makes sense. I could see that aligning that like, with all of, a lot of his interest.
Yeah, like when he was doing tape releases back before.
That's cool.
Anyway, so yeah, but okay, so we're you're early 2010s.
I was just completely. I didn't get it. It didn't make any sense to me. And but I heard a lot of it, you know, because they would play it at the office at the shop. Yeah. And but I've always been a you know obviously growing up in the 80s and 90s, Iggy Pop was on my radar, and I always liked Iggy. But this song, which I heard because it was an Iggy song, it was so strange to me that somehow Iggy Pop was singing the way he's singing on this track. It just seems like a totally different Iggy. And sure. I looked, you know, who produced this track. It's One of Tricks Point Never. And I thought, wow, if this person can coax this kind of music, this kind of song out of Iggy Pop,
yeah,
he might be worth giving another listen to. And so I went and I listened to Age Of, which is the record that had just come out, mm-hmm. and everything clicked. I completely fell in love with amazing. Him and went back and listened to and bought most of his pre-existing catalog. And I've been a fan ever since.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, this song is so, I remember when I first heard it. It blew me away because I had the same, I'd been a fan of 10 Tricks for a long time but this just felt like somebody like leveling up or something. It was just like, okay, you've made but like you said, I had kind of the same reaction of like, if you can get, you got Iggy Pop to do like, wow, and to me, I was thinking too, I was like, this is, Iggy Pop, I mean, I don't know how old Iggy Pop is. He's got to be pushing 80, right, by now? At least in his 70s. It's like...
Oh, easily.
I would love to hear him, like, embrace this kind of side a little more. I'd, like, see what else he could do in this, you know. And I know a lot of people compared it to, like, the Johnny Cash Hurt thing, which mm-hmm. I can see that. But mm-hmm. it also kind of reminds me, like, of, like, late period Bowie or something, too. Like, where... Yeah. And those are great records. I don't know. It's really... Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, what is there, like, let's hear the Iggy Pop record produced by 10 Tricks Point.
Oh, wow. Oh yeah. That That's would be incredible. I mean, I'm there for that. I'm yeah. there.
So, maybe we can speak it into existence here. Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool, too, that it's always interesting when that happens, like, because I've had this experience where something just doesn't click, and then something makes it click, and then all of it just kind of falls. It's like, oh, okay, now I get all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that must have been fun because that's a pretty rich catalog of
it really is. Yeah, definitely. There's so much to chew on. He's an amazing talent.
Yeah. Okay, so normally before I ask this question about lyrics, I ask if lyrics are a thing to you, but you've already said like you don't, lyrics are not.
Yeah.
So this must have been one of the harder questions.
It was. And I feel like my answer is a little thin. Yeah, I'm definitely not a lyrics person. Never have been, even when I was a kid. So the song is Dialed In by the 90 Day Men. And there's a part where someone in the band yells, "Hey, young sinners." And then somebody else in the band, who sounds like they're down the hall, just says, "Hey!" But it's in this, like, just the most, like, guttural, like, antagonistic, aggressive way. And just that line, "Hey, young sinners," it just makes me think about, you know, being in the audience at a 90 Day Men show when I was much younger. And almost like they're singing that out to us, and then there's somebody right. else that's, you know, scolding us almost like, "Hey, you know, get your act together, get your lives together, you dumbasses." But I don't know, it just has some impact for me, and I still feel the same way whenever I hear that lyric. It's not much of a lyric, admittedly, but it was sung in a way.
Yeah, okay. I mean, any chance to mention 90 Day Men is not a bad thing, because what a great band.
I know. And they are they're reuniting for a couple of shows up in Chicago.
Yeah, I know. I saw that and I was like, dang. Like, how do I get up there for that?
The only thing that would make going to Chicago in the middle of, you know, in the middle right. of the winter worthwhile right. would yeah. be that show.
Yeah, I love Chicago, but not this time of year.
No. Yeah, January 1st, December 31st, Chicago is a rough time period.
Yeah, but yeah, this would help. But hey, it's a lyric. It counts. And I love that part in the song. Like, I know, I'm right there with you. Okay, so the next, you're supposed to pick two, but you kind of answered all of them. So we'll kind of do a little rapid fire here, kind of. Sure. We'll try not to talk too much. But so we'll start with what song have you or can you listen to the most?
Very easy choice, Fantas, and all the various alternate versions that were done. Katharina Barbieri.
Amazing.
This piece of music, it's just an incredible piece of music.
Yeah.
It's, and I've seen it live, and it's incredible live, too.
She's, oh my gosh, her sound design and just, oh God. She's unbelievable.
And she's like an emotional sound designer.
Yes. If that's
possible.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
I Make Noise and Katharina should collaborate. Just gonna say.
That'd be fun.
Okay, what is the last song you completely fell in love with?
I had a couple because I can't remember which one happened first, but there's a local artist, X-Or, who's a young man who's also in the band Secret Shame, which are a pretty good band that are from Asheville as well. But he has this track, Lazy Heat, that was basically my summer jam. It's such a good song.
It's so good.
And then the other one is Wall of Eyes, The Smile, which maybe The Smile is the way to segue back into falling in love with Radiohead again, so you can reconnect on that.
I was listening to this, and it had this kind of like weird sort of, to me anyway, this like dystopian Western feeling to it that I really liked or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me, because I hadn't really, I'll be honest, I haven't really checked out The Smile because of the Radiohead thing. I was like, eh. But this made me curious, so I'm going to have to like go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, and that X-War, I really love that. I love that whole tape. Like the,
yeah, it's really good.
Ceremony of Season, obviously bias here. Like you put out one of your things and I'm a big fan, but that label hasn't missed.
Not yet.
Okay, what cover is better than the original?
Let's see. Oh, I almost didn't put this down because I feel like probably everybody says this.
Nobody's picked it.
Really? I'm blown away. Okay. Nothing Compares to You, Sinead O'Connor. Originally written and recorded by Prince.
Yeah. I mean, so when I wrote this question, it was this, like this song and Hendrix doing All Along the Watchtower. It's like, those are the two like canon answer, right? And some, I think All Along the Watchtower has been picked once, but this one never got picked. This is, like, I love Prince. Huge Prince fan.
Yeah.
This is, he pales in comparison to what she did with this song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the sexiest song?
Sexiest song? Easy. When Doves Cry, Prince.
Yeah. I think, there's a lot of Prince songs probably that could go here, but that's right near the top.
Totally. Also, the video, when that video came out, MTV was still a really important thing.
And
that video, especially to our young minds, it twisted them. It twisted them up a little.
Yeah, it was formative. Maybe not in the best way, but it was formative.
Definitely.
Okay, what is the best hype song?
Panama, Van Halen.
Yeah. I've said this on here before, but I had a realization in recent years because, like, I'm obsessed with and love arpeggio, like synth arpeggios, or like synth. Mm-hmm. I can just—it's like a straight line from my obsession as a kid with finger tapping. Like that is like So yeah, shout out to Eddie Van Halen.
It is. Finger tapping is like the arpeggio of guitar playing, although much harder to do than playing arpeggios on a synth.
Right. You actually on a synth it's just like just press a button and yeah. Depending on the synth. But Panama. Oh, so good. I was playing this, I was just blasting this yesterday when I was trying to, and yeah. Killer song. So
yeah.
Okay. Two questions left, two quote unquote big questions. Mm-mm. I don't know. So what is the song that means the most to you?
So this one means a lot because of when I first heard it. It's the song is To Sheila by the Smashing Pumpkins. Mm-hmm. It was on a Pumpkins album that I don't think was one of their most loved albums. I don't think it did great, or maybe it did. Yeah. I don't know. It didn't seem like a very popular album. But this song always makes me think about when I first met Kelly. And it had just come out, and then it was on the radio or being played around in places. And so it always just makes me think about that time. And that was just a very special time for me. So this song will forever be special to me. Maybe it has something to do with the song itself, but I think it has more to do with just when I heard it.
I really like this song. When I was a teenager, like Smashing Pumpkins were a big thing. And I remember when this came out being very confused in a good way, because it was, you know, it was like they made this sort of electronic album, although this song mm-hmm. is like acoustic guitar and singing. This song, I don't know. I think it's like a really beautiful song.
And, yes, it is. It is beautiful. It must have, you know, fuck it. It has something to do with the song too. I think it has to. It is a beautiful song, because I heard a lot of songs during that time period, and this is the one that I attached to that memory. So
yeah,
it clearly was worthy of attaching to what is the greatest memory of my life.
Yeah. You know, now that I'm thinking about that, I remember when my wife and I first met, and like we met online. And she lived in Seattle and I lived in Tulsa. But I remember I sent her a mixed CDR. I think this song was on there. I think we still have that CDR somewhere. There was a couple songs.
I hope you do.
Yeah. I know it's in one of like 10 boxes of CDs. But I think I'm going to have to look. It's just hitting me, because I just thinking of that, especially like, you know, I was like 22 and like so in love. And I mean, obviously it's 20 plus years later and we're still together. So it was legit. But that line of like, you make me real.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, just say what you want about Billy Corgan. I don't, you know, whatever, man. When the planets aligned, he wrote some great songs.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. You can't deny that.
Yeah. Okay. At this moment in time, or I think in your all time, what is your favorite song?
Easy. Pop Life, Prince. I've been listening to it basically my whole life. I just played it. We were doing a road trip. We went out to the Midwest and back, and we played it on the way out and the way back. It's just, there's so much I love about this song. The groove, obviously, Prince is just the master of like the groove. It has a great groove, great bass line. But then the thing that I really love about it, and I remember it as a kid, this, it really turned me on my ear. There's the part towards the end of the song where the music fades out and these sounds of like what I imagine as a kid being like this party or something.
Yeah.
And so there's like this party, all these party sounds. And then the song comes back again. And that kind of blew me away back in, you know, when I first heard it in the 80s. Just like, wow, like Prince just did that. He just like had a party and recorded it. I mean, in my mind, I was like, Prince had a party just to record it and then like put that into the song. That's like a solo or so. It's like a party solo or something.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, how did this happen? Just such a good. And there's just a lot of, I don't know. I know I said I'm not really a lyrics person, but that that just that line, "Pop Life," and how he sings it. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot. There's a lot there.
I think, yeah, I think you've just like invented my favorite concept of the year of a party solo. I think party more songs, solo. You know, party solo. That's incredible. Yeah, no, this is one of those songs. I mean, I think Prince has a lot of those songs, but like, yeah, I can't envision a way. Like, how could you ever get sick of this song?
So good.
Yeah.
Like, I think the only way you could get sick of it is if it became unfortunately tied to some terrible, tragic event in your life.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to hear it anymore for that alone. But yeah, just on the song's merits itself, yeah, it's not, it can't happen.
Yeah. Party solo. I'm gonna be thinking about that for the rest of the day. I'm like, all right, I need to have a, how am I gonna work a party solo in this? It's like not the kind of music I make at all, but I'm
no,
that kind of make it even better. Like this sort of, here's some weird field recordings and synthesizers, party solo. It's like you're walking out in the woods and you came upon a
kegger.
Yeah,
a rager.
And then you got back to being all ethereal or whatever. I don't know. That's awesome. Okay. Well, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate you doing this. And so Imagine Dolphin is out now. It's on tape. Are the tapes ready?
They're not yet. I'm working through that. I decided I'm going to have the covers printed on the risograph up the road.
Oh, here. Nice.
There's a place called Wooly Press that has a risograph. And that's cool. Going to add a little time to getting them printed. But I think they'll look cooler and be
absolutely, you
know, a little special.
Yeah. Well, I don't know exactly when this will be out. So maybe the tapes will be out by then. If not, go pre-order one.
Yeah, you can pre-order right now at my Bandcamp. And all the proceeds are going to Lamplight AVL, which is the organization that Quad Multimode Gate Raffle is also going to. So it's a good cause, just trying to keep the arts alive here in Asheville, North Carolina.
Awesome. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was super fun. I love talking about music.
Once again, thank you to Tony Rolando for being an amazing guest, making amazing music, and just having some really great picks too, man. I still can't believe it's the first time that Nothing Compares to You has come up as the cover that's better than the original, because it's like that and All Along the Watchtower were the two songs that I had in mind when I wrote that question. Anyway, check out Imagine a Dolphin. It is out now in cassette and digital formats and is an absolute fucking peach of a record. And the tape, the physical edition is a tape, and it's got a like risograph J card, which looks amazing. So yeah, huge recommendation as ever. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I don't, you know, whatever, that shit really helps with all the algorithm and all that stuff. Gets it in front of people's, I always say gets it in front of people's eyes, but it's their ears. And if you really appreciate this show and the work Fox Digitalis does, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis, ongoing support means the world. Helps us continue and stay afloat. Everybody who signed up, thank you so, so much. Until next time, though, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.